Thank you for listening to this message from Northwest Hills Community Church in Corvallis, Oregon. You can learn more about our church at nwhills.com. Today, lead pastor Josh Karstensen starts a series called What is Going On, where we read the entire Bible in a year. Genesis is about beginnings and formation. Specifically, it describes creation, our separation from God, God's plan to make things new, human families and their issues, God's covenant, and the nation of Israel. It's not a happy beginning, but throughout the book, God reminds us that He knew exactly what He was doing. After the message, read the book of Genesis. Also, check out nwhills.com/hub for additional resources like book overviews, reading plans, and application questions. Now, here's today's message.
We are starting through the Bible this year, and I mean that as much as I was joking when I used the treadmill analogy. The Bible is a tool. It's worthless by itself. Like, this piece of paper is absolutely worthless unless we read it and unless we let it invest in our souls, because this points to something. This in and of itself isn't something. Right? This is a letter from someone, and our heart is to get after that someone this year. And so it's somewhere around 750,000 words. You break that down into 49 weeks, it's about 15,000 words a week. If you break that down into 6 days, we'll give you a break for Sundays. It's somewhere around 3,000 words a week or a day. Which if you break that down into somewhere around 300 words a page, it's about 10 pages a week. I think we can do that. That feels reasonable. It feels manageable. And that's evenly distributed, which we're not going to do. So some weeks may be, 50 pages a day, and some weeks may be three. But we can do that. I believe in it. And really, like my wife said, ultimately, we're doing this to get after the big question of, what is going on? Like, what is going on in the world? Like, you look around the world, and it's so easy to say, what is happening right now? Right? It's so easy in our faith, in our own lives. Sometimes we go through the seasons where we're just like, what is happening to my family? Yet, what is happening to my faith even? We go through seasons where maybe our faith isn't where we want it to be, and so we ask God, what is going on? Right? And this book has something to say, because God has something to say about what is going on, which is why we are going to make a commitment to going through it this whole year, asking what is going on. So we're going to start this week. We're going to start on page one. So if you got this, I'm going to ask that you would stand. We're going to read the very first verse. So let's go ahead and stand together. And then we're going to jump to the very last verse. And I'm not going to read everything in between. Just throwing that out there. When I'm done, I'm going to say, this is the word of the Lord, and you can say, thanks be to God. Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Let's skip a few pages to Genesis 50. It's on page 44. The very last sentence. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. All right, you can grab a seat. Now, for those of you who have read this before, this will make a little bit more sense. I'm gonna try to do everything I can to make sense of this for everyone, but I want you to imagine that opening scene is this beautiful, powerful, like, scene with so much hope, right? So if you can imagine a movie scene or a scene in your life where something happened that was really, really good, maybe this is the wedding day, maybe you are at the altar, or, maybe you met your future spouse online, or maybe you've met your kid for the first time, or maybe you got that first bike that you've always longed for, or you played your first Dungeons and Dragons game and your heart is just so excited. Whatever it may be, Like the opening scene is this very beautiful, exciting, filled with all kinds of like deep love and massive potential. Right? I hope we've all had those seasons in our life where it's just, this is so, so good. And then you get to the very end. And it is as far from the beginning as you can imagine. This is the scene in the movie that's just terrible. Right? This is the spouse giving the other spouse a divorce papers. Right? This is my child getting news that they have just died. Right? This is the bottom of the bottom. This is awful. And if you've read Genesis, you're like, well, it's not that bad. I promise you it's really bad if you think about it in terms of the beginning and the end. So what happened? What happened in 50 chapters where we go from like, this is the best possible news ever to, this is horrible. It could not get any worse. What in the world is going on? In this very first book that we're looking at today, we're going to see the introduction of basically everything. This is who God is. This is the very nature of God's being, and this is the condition of the human heart. We are going to see it all today, and we're going to see this just huge like journey from high, high to super low, low, and we'll end with the cross, which is both incredibly high and incredibly low at the same time, and we'll wrap it all up with communion here. But today we start answering the question of what is going on as God has shown himself to us through this book in Genesis. And I'm going to go old school preacher on you today. I got five observations. The godness of God, and I know godness is not a word, but just go with it. The weight of holiness, the power of grace, the limitations of man, and the reversal of expectations. Before we go through each one of those points, I want to give you a brief overview of the book. And then kind of share a few things about expectations of, you know, those of us who know the word well and those of us who are just learning for the first time. So this book starts out in the first three chapters, we learn about creation. Very quickly, we learn about the fall, and I'll talk about that here in a minute. And then Genesis chapter 4 through 11, we get Cain and Abel. We get the story of Noah and the great flood. After that, we get the story of Babel. And then things zoom in, like exponentially zoom into one family. And for one family, for the next few thousand years, we're going to watch what happens. And so it starts with Abraham in chapters 12 through 25. And then we get to his son, Isaac, in chapters 25 through 27. After that, in chapters 28 to 36, we see the life of Jacob. And in chapters 37 to 50, we see the life of Joseph. Now, if you've been with us through the summer, you've gotten some helps because we did Hebrews 11 and we did a deep dive with a lot of those people. And today we're not going to do a deep dive with those people, but that's just kind of the general overview of what is going on here. And I recognize that when I say those words, some of us in this room shake their heads and like, yep, yep, I get it. Like Tower of Babel, yep, I've read that. Noah, I got that. The fall, like that makes a lot of sense. And I also recognize that there's people in here, when I say, go to chapter 50, you're going, I didn't know that there were chapters in the Bible. And I want to say, that's beautiful, and that's good, and that's right, and I love that about our church. I love that. I love that every single week I'm talking to someone who's like, man, I have no idea how to follow along with half of what you're saying, and I'm going to try to do everything that I can here to make context appropriate so where we can kind of follow along with what's being said, big picture. But I also would say, man, take what my wife said. Take that First Steps class. Like, go do that. Ask someone around you, hey, could you tell me a little bit more about what this is all about? I don't quite get all the stories. If you don't like the people around you, come talk to me. Right? If you don't like me, we got tons of other pastors around here. If you don't like them, we have a really good resource library out there. If you want to be a reader and you don't want to talk to anyone, that's great. We've actually doubled it this last week. There's all kinds of good books there. We have a lot of staff recommendations. So go check that out. But the hope is, man, this is a place where even if some of the things that I'm about to say just go over your head, the hope is it's a primer for the week to get us reading it on our own. And if you have questions now, just wait till you read this week. You will have way more questions, I promise you. But the hope is that this is a place for both the long-term believer, right? The family that was here 30 years ago and is visiting again today. And this is the place where someone who's just trying to figure out what in the world is going on, if this has anything to it. And so we want to welcome everyone here. So back to Genesis, observation number one, the godness of God, right? If we were to read through chapters 1 and 2 today, you would see from the very beginning, in the beginning, God created, and it says that he creates everything, and it goes through this beautiful story of God creating, and God makes everything, right? It goes through kind of the different phases of creation and the totality of creation, and God's creating heavens and earth. That's like everything, right? He's creating land and sea. He's creating plants and animals, and at the height of creation, God creates humankind. He creates you and I. So from the beginning, we see that God is self-existent, right? In the beginning, God. It presupposes that he already exists, that he is the first cause, that nothing caused God. And if you've been a Christian for a while, we take that for granted. We're like, yeah, it's God. Like, he's been around. But that, like, to really think about that, like, let that settle in. Nothing caused God to exist. He has always existed. Now, that breaks every form of logic that is in our mind. But it's true. We've got to hold on to that. And then in early Genesis, we see that God is creator, like I said. And the thing is, we talk about this sometimes around here, but early Genesis is not a, this is exactly how God did it. It's not a scientific manual. Like, that's not the primary point of early Genesis. And so, you know, we can get all caught up in the how. We can all get caught up on, like, well, okay, how many days and seconds, what was going on? And faith must be true because this is true. Or maybe it's not true because this is true. And people ask me all the time, what do you think about early Genesis, Pastor? What's going on there? Is the earth this old? Is it this old? What's going on? Because I learned this in my science class, and I don't know how to reconcile it with over here. So I will say this, man, I have no problem when someone says, you know what, I believe that God created the world in 7, 6 literal 24-hour days. I believe that early Genesis reads that. I got no problem believing that. I got no problem, you know, if Adam and Eve were born day one, I don't think that they would have been born looking like infants. Right, I believe that they would have been born looking like they had some age to them. I'd like to think Adam, when he was born on day one, looked like a bald 38-year-old. I'm just saying, like, I think that's probably how God would have done it in Genesis. So you may look at that and you're like, why would God create it like this? I got no problem believing he did it like that. I also have absolutely no problem believing that if God wanted to create the world over huge periods of time and say he did it like this, I got no problem with that. Right, and I know we get all caught up on like, well, it had to be like this, had to be like this. The reality is, I don't know that Genesis is trying to tell us exactly how, but it's saying that he did it. That it was with purpose, and it was with intentionality. And it wasn't just, hey, let me just create something and you go do everything on your own. Like, God was intentionally moving behind every single working piece of how it all happened. Absolutely, he was there guiding the whole process. And we can have our convictions on the how, but man, I want to be generous with how we love each other in that. But what's most important in early Genesis is that God creates us and he creates us in his image. There's something that's really important about that, especially in this day and age. It's always been important that God creates us in the Imago Dei, right? In the image of him. So we are distinct from all of creation. Yes, we have a lot of the same DNA, absolutely. But there is something about me, there's something about you as a human that is totally separate from the rest of creation, right? Because God makes us in his image. We are very different. So again, biologically, we are similar, but we have God's spirit, right? There's something so beautiful. So I'm not just my biology, right? And we know this practically, you know, biologically, like on a cellular level, I'm very different today than I was 10 years ago. I think most cells in my body are different, except maybe the enamel on my teeth and a few other weird spots. But I'm different biologically, but in God's image, I am me because he created us in his image, which says that we have purpose, which says that we are made for a reason, which says that we intrinsically have value, right? So every single one of us, if you're here and you're just feeling worthless and you're feeling depressed and you're feeling like, you know, I don't know if I have value, Genesis 1 and 2 says you were the height of creation and you have value like nothing else because you are made in God's image. So if you're here and you've been struggling with that, and I know a lot of people struggle with that, just know God has created mankind at the height of creation in his image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them, and it was beautiful, and it was good, and creation was right, and he has them in this garden, and it's this perfect, beautiful scene. Now then in chapter 3, we see history taking a tragic, dark turn. Observation number 2, the weight of holiness. Right, by the time we get to Genesis 3, creation, as God originally intended, really falls apart in a lot of ways. God says, hey, Adam and Eve, you can do anything you want. I'm giving you absolute dominion. I'm giving you absolute reign over all of creation. Do whatever you want. There's one thing I don't want you to do. One thing. And I'd like to believe that they like followed the Lord for years and years in the garden. But the text is like, and the next sentence, right? Like, good night. The serpent comes on the scene, and he gets us to question God's goodness. And he gets us to question the reality that God is for us. And ultimately, we make a decision as mankind that I'm going to do what I want, and I'm going to say, you know what, God? Thanks, but no thanks. I would like to make the decisions for what I want to do with my life. And we do the one thing that God tells us not to do, right? We eat the fruit. And we see early on, very early on, that is the definition of sin, is doing what God tells us not to do. And this is really, really important. We got to get this. If you don't get this in early Genesis, like humankind and what is good and what is wrong does not make sense. So there is such a thing as evil. There is such a thing as sin. And what sin is doing what God tells us we ought not to do. And intrinsically, we all know this deep down. Right, we know deep down that there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong, and they're not right and wrong just based on what a majority of any given people group at any given time says. They're wrong because God says they're wrong, and we know it. And here's the deal. This week, as you're reading through the story of Genesis, it is a brutal story in a lot of ways. You are going to read things in Genesis where you are going, what is going on? Like, you are going to read of murder. You're going to read of rape. You're going to read of coercion. You're going to read of abuse of the worst kinds. And your soul should cringe when you read that, because sin is cringeworthy because God created us to live differently, and that should tear at your soul. Right? When you're reading about Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah, your soul should go, what in the world is going on? And when we look around our world today, right, when we read stories, when we experience sin, like, it should tear at your soul. Right, when people who should love you abandon you. Right, when people who should care for you are now against you. Right, when we are experiencing what God says you ought not to do, that should tear at your soul. And here's the thing. People use evil and sin as an argument against God's existence. And I've never understood that. I've really never understood the argument. I understand most arguments against Christianity, and they make sense to me in a lot of ways. That's one I never understand. Because if God doesn't exist, you can't point to something and say that's intrinsically wrong. If God does not exist, you can't do that. You have to say, well, it's wrong for a certain people group in a certain time, but it's not universally wrong. But we know that sin is wrong all the time, ultimately because God put it on our hearts. And what we see in humanity again and again is when we do what's wrong and we pretend like it doesn't matter, it still tears us apart, right? I can say this all over, you know, even just this last week, my wife and I were at our kids' open house for school and some of the things that they're teaching in school, right? You just know, like, you know this is wrong, and you can feel it in the room. You can feel people don't really believe this, but we're just kind of going along with this thing. Ultimately, because when we go against what we know is right, like when we sin in that way, our souls will tell it to us. And we're going to read something about this. We're going to see something in the story of Genesis. God does something about sin because he's holy. If you read this week through the story, you're going to notice again and again, when sin happens, God deals with it. He judges sin. He starts early in Genesis chapter 3 and he deals immediately with the serpent. The serpent is the first person that is judged in the entire Bible. Look at that. Right? When sin happens, God goes to the serpent and he judges him. And then he makes a promise. He makes a promise to mankind that I'm going to deal with this eventually once and for all. The serpent may bite your heel, but you will crush its head. And then God deals with all the sin that you're going to see again and again and again throughout the story. He banishes Adam and Eve, right? He banishes from them from the garden. He doesn't just say, you're forgiven, you can keep living this way. He banishes them, right? When Cain kills his brother Abel, what happens? God banishes him, right? When God destroys the whole earth with Noah, he is establishing his righteous judgment on the earth. Right, he spreads people out in the Tower of Babel who through pride think that they are like gods. He will destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. God judges sin. Right, so we got to know this. God creates, it's beautiful, we sin, and God judges sin, which is both incredibly comforting and terrifying. Right, it's really comforting if you have experienced sin against you. Right, which we all have experienced. It's really comforting when you turn on your television and you see like war crimes happening in real time and you read stories of heinous things going on and you're like, okay, thank God that you will judge this eventually because it would be hard to be alive in a world where nothing ever gets punished. Right, but it's also scary because we look in our mirror sometimes and we go, yeah, I was the one who was causing this pain. And that means judgment's going to happen to me. So what's going on with that, Lord? If you are a God of judgment and I am creating hardship, what are you going to do about that? Where am I in all this? Which leads us to observation number 3, the power of grace. We see very quickly that yes, God banishes Adam and Eve. We see yes, he banishes Cain, and yes, he destroys the entire earth with Noah, but he always gives a way out. He always gives grace in his punishment, right? You think about Adam and Eve. What does God do? He creates clothes for them, right? He gives them children. He makes them that promise that we talked about. He says, hey, this will not last forever, right? I will give you something that will bring an end to all this, right? For Cain, he gives him a mark so that no one will kill him, right? For the story of Noah, he provides a boat so that ultimately mankind can have a second shot. Right? Not wanting people to perish is ultimately God's heart, but wanting us to come to repentance. And ultimately, we will see this in the cross as Jesus pours out his life is in an act of taking on God's wrath and an act of mercy, giving us a second shot, giving us life with him for those who believe in him. So we will see that, yes, God is holy, and we got to hold on to that, and we got to live rightly because of that. But we will see that God is also incredibly gracious. He is kind. Observation number 4, the limitations of understanding. Man, we're going to see in the book of Genesis that we have a very limited understanding of everything that's going on, especially early on in Genesis, right? We read early Genesis, that especially pre-Noah, right? Most people believe, even most Christians, believe that most of human history happened pre the flood. Right, 2 Peter talks about this, like the ancient world, like there is a massive amount of history that is spoken about before, or that happened before the flood, and Genesis doesn't talk a whole lot about it. It's just like, and these people were all evil, and then God killed them all. Which leaves us with all kinds of questions, like what was going on? Right, what was going on in like ancient China? What was going on in America? It's like, what was going on in India? Like, the Bible speaks to none of that, which should leave us with all kinds of questions. It's just like, and all kinds of evil was happening, and then God dealt with it. And then we zoom in on one family, which is really bizarre, right? You think about all the global things that are happening around the world, and we zoom in on one guy in the middle of nowhere with zero significance, a guy named Abram. Right? It's just like, and now for 2,000 years, we're going to look at one family. Which should leave you with a million questions of like, well, what about all the other families? Like, was God doing something with them? Like, where was he? Was God working and moving in Americas? Like, was he moving in ancient China? Was he moving in Japan? Like, what's going on here? It should leave us with 1,000 questions. Right on top of that, all the things that we do see God doing should leave us with a lot of questions. You think about all the things that God does in Genesis and all the things that he doesn't do. Right? A story that we've talked about a couple different times this last summer. You think about a guy named Abraham. He gets married to this woman named Sarah. And they go to Egypt, and apparently Sarah's beautiful, and Abraham's afraid that if he goes there and he says, this is my wife, then they will kill him to take her. And so it's like, oh, she's my sister. Here, let her go into your palace. And she goes in the palace, and what does God do? He afflicts the entire palace with plagues. You're like, Lord, that's brilliant. Like, could you do that more often? Like, if I'm about to do something really stupid, God, could you just stop me from doing that? So we see sometimes like God's very active hand stopping certain things from happening. But then we see all kinds of wreckage and carnage of God just saying, well, if you want to do that, let's see what happens. Why? Right? You think about our lives and you think about the things that God allows us to do and you think about all the things that he stops us from doing, and that should cause a lot of questions. Right? I think about this a lot as a pastor. I think about it a lot, you know, kind of church dynamics of like, you know, what makes for a good church, what makes for a healthy church. And I think about it a lot when it comes to salvations, right? Because I believe, and God's very clear, that salvation is a gift from him alone. There is nothing I can do to save anyone in this room. Right? Like that is from the Lord. The Holy Spirit awakens in us the ability to believe in the grace that God gives. Like that is from the Lord. God, why don't you do that more? Right? Why don't we have 15 services? God, if you want the world to know you, like why don't you make yourself like showing up more often again and again in profound, powerful ways, awakening hearts? Like if you're paying attention, there's all kinds of questions that we have when it comes to who God is and how he works. And sometimes those questions can lead us to despair, right? Especially when you have a kid who's not where you want them to be in their faith. Or especially when you have a friend who's walked away from a spouse. Or especially when, whatever, the job didn't work out or something terrible happened or you are at the end of Genesis and you're reading the story and you're going, wait, what happened? Like, you created, everything was good, it was right, it was beautiful, and then at the end, like, it's death, and we're in Egypt? Like, we are as far from Eden as possible. In Eden, it was, God is walking with you in the cool of the night, we are in this place of abundance, we are in this, like, incredibly, like, vulnerable, beautiful, intimate setting where there is no death. Like, death is not a thing in early Genesis. Then we get to the end of the story and Joseph's dead. Like death is now a thing. It leaves us with 1,000,000 questions. It will leave us wondering, God, are you good? And do you know what you're doing? Right? When you're going through a hard season of life, it can lead us to those questions. God, what is going on? And do you know what you're doing? But the end of Genesis is going to tell us, if we look closely, God knows exactly what he's doing. From the very beginning, he knows exactly what he's doing. Think with me for a minute. How many of you have ever seen the pyramids in person, the Great Pyramids of Egypt? A couple of you, maybe some of you, maybe one person. I've seen them from the air once. My wife and I were on a flight from London to Ethiopia, and the pilot says, hey, check out, look out your window. You can see the Great Pyramids. And I remember seeing them from 30,000 feet and thinking, holy schmoly, those things are huge. I think the biggest one, Giza, is about 455 feet tall. Massive. And they are a small part of an ancient empire. Right? This empire that they say for about 3,100 years was the superpower of all superpowers. And think with me for a minute the time period of what's going on here and think about what's going on with Joseph. They say the pyramids were built somewhere between 250 or 2550 and 2490 BC. It's pretty close to the time period of Joseph. And you think about what's going on in this region, and you think about this global superpower of Egypt, and you think about all the prosperity that's going on in Egypt, right? You think about the Nile and what it provided, both in terms of like fertileness and in terms of protection from enemies, right? You think about the pantheon of gods that they had and all the different statues. I mean, you can go see that today in so many profound, like very upfront in your face, like idol worship of pagan gods. This is the superpower of the world. And what does God do with the preeminent power of the universe at that time? What does he do? He uses one guy who is a slave, who was brought in on some chain gang from the middle of nowhere, and who lands in Potiphar's house. Right, you think about this. Think about Joseph with me for a minute. Here's a guy who had his brothers betray him. Now, I know that we got messed up families in here, right? My dad's in the room. We can attest we all have messed up families to some degree. I have not been sold into slavery by my siblings, but I can imagine that would be rough. So here's Joseph. He's sold into slavery. He has nothing. I mean, you want to talk about having nothing. He has no parents anymore. He has no siblings. He has no wife. He has no land. He doesn't even speak the language. And here he is in chains by himself being sold into this great, vast empire. And God is going to use this one person from the middle of nowhere to bring ultimately this worship of all these gods to their knees. And he's going to save a nation through this one guy. You want to talk about a season where you're wondering, God, what is going on? That was Joseph. God always does the unimaginable. As you're reading this next week and you think about the unimaginable that happened in the book of Genesis, God will again and again and again do the things that no one expected, starting with all the people that he uses. Right? When we're talking about the global superpowers of the world at this time, Genesis is not mentioning them. Right? When you talk about the typical people that you would expect to use, that's not who God uses. He always uses the second-born son. Think about it. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, all of them are not firstborns. In a society where the firstborn is celebrated, think about the women in here. All of the primary women, right? Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, what were they? They had one thing in common. They were all barren. Right, in a world where that is a cultural death sentence, God says, I'm going to use you. I'm going to do what no one else expects because it's through my power and my power alone that I'm going to show the world that I am so much better than everything you could long for. Starting with this epicenter of global power in Egypt. And you think about what Joseph's heart was going through when he went to being sold by his brothers, to being brought in chains, to ultimately raising in the ranks, to overseeing this entire nation, a slave from the middle of nowhere, through the hand of God. Listen to what Joseph says in Genesis 45 about God's work in his life when at some points you have to believe we were wondering what's going on. His brothers at this point have recognized that Joseph is their brother, and he says this in Genesis 45, starting in verse 4. He says, I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into slavery. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. You want to talk about the unexpected? For the famine has been in the land these last 2 years, and there are 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. See, God knows exactly what he's doing. Right? When you get to the end of Genesis and you're like, what is going on? God knows exactly what he's doing, and he will do whatever it takes to show the world his love. Right? And ultimately, this is what we get to when we get to the end, when we get to the New Testament, when we get to the life and death of Jesus. Right? Because you want to talk about someone who you look at and you go like, huh, someone born to a family of zero significance. Right? Mary and Joseph, you want to talk about zero significance from a place of nowhere, right? To a family with nothing, put on a cross meant by people to harm him. yet God was doing something great. Because you think about where you are on day one after Jesus is killed, and you're asking yourself the same question. God, do you know what you're doing? And think with me for a minute. I've made this up, but I think these words echo the exact same words of Joseph. I think Jesus could have said the same words of Joseph. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and a future in heaven, to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who put me on this cross, but God. He has made me a father to the world and Lord of all his house and ruler over all the land. Right? So when Joseph at the end of Genesis dies and we're left wondering what is going on, when Jesus dies and we're left wondering what's going on, the story doesn't end there, because the story with Joseph doesn't end with death. Because if the story of our lives ended with death, that would be it. Right? We'd have nothing after that. But it ends with life, ultimately. It ends with the promise that God made in Genesis 3 that someday I will crush death itself. I will crush the head of the serpent. And that's what Jesus does for us on the cross, which is so much better than what happened in Genesis, which is so much better than what we're going to see next week in Exodus. But it's a promise that God knows exactly what he's doing. So as we open up this series, as we open up our Bible, the one thing that I want us to take away this week is God knows what he's doing. Right? When we sit here and we wonder, God, what is going on? With whatever question you may ask, God knows exactly what he's doing. God knew exactly that it would take a random slave from the middle of nowhere to take on the world's biggest superpower, to ultimately take on their gods, for him to say, I am so much better than you could ever imagine. I am so much better. So as we wrap it up, our Pastor Ron's going to come and he's going to lead us in communion here. Our band's going to come up and we're going to ultimately say, God, thank you that you know what is going on. Would you pray with me? Father God, thank you for life. God, I thank you that in this story of Genesis, where we're introduced to the grand narrative of who you are a God who creates. You are a God who sets what is right and what is wrong. You are a God who holds firm to your righteousness. God, you are a God who will judge what is evil, what is wrong. You are a God who knows exactly what needs to happen. And you are a God who is willing to go to the ends of the earth, who's willing to go to a tiny, insignificant, know-nothing town with a young woman named Mary and a young place that's not expecting anything. And you come through, Jesus, and you're put on that cross. And when we're wondering, God, is this the end? Is this death? Does death win? You say, nope, it's just the beginning, because I've conquered death. I've crushed the head of the serpent. And ultimately, Jesus, you invite us into a kingdom with you. Lord, thank you for that life. And we want to follow you with everything that we have. And thank you that we can trust you. You are good. We pray all this in your beautiful name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to today's teaching from Northwest Hills Community Church. We hope you find ways to apply the gospel to your life. And be sure to check out our website, nwhills.com, where you'll find ways to engage with us. And if you're able, we'd love to see you at church next Sunday. Thanks again for listening.